Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Welcome back, everyone. It's time for another deep dive.
Yeah.
And this time, we are going to take a look at all the stuff that you sent our way from April 8th, 2025.
Yeah.
So, we've got a lot to cover today. I mean, just glancing through it, we've got the trade war, of course, which never seems to really go away.
Right.
And then there's some interesting stuff happening at the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like we might be getting another attempt at a military parade.
Oh.
Yeah, and a gubernatorial race heating up in Michigan.
Okay.
Some, questionable timing for a special election down in Texas.
Interesting.
And then all this buzz around these hands-off protests in a bunch of swing states.
Yeah, I noticed that in the sources.
Yeah, so lots to dig into.
Absolutely.
As always, we'll try to pull out, like, the most important insights. So you don't have to wade through pages and pages of this stuff.
Right.
So why don't we just jump right in?
Sure.
And I guess the most logical place to start would be with the trade war. Mm. I mean, it's front and center in a lot of these articles.
Yeah, for sure. The market's reaction yesterday kind of sums it up. Really, I mean, the Dow dropped almost a full percentage point, 0.91% to be exact. And the S&P 500 wasn't much better, down 0.23%.
Mm.
NASDAQ actually managed to go up a little bit, 0.10%.
Oh, interesting.
But yeah, I mean, this whole thing with the tariffs and the market just freaking out every time there's any news, it's like a broken record at this point.
It's exhausting.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, it makes you wonder what businesses are supposed to do.
Right. Like, how can you plan anything when the rules of the game keep changing?
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, are they supposed to just constantly be adjusting their supply chains and their pricing?
And consumers, too. Like, how do you budget when you don't know what things are going to cost?
It's just a mess.
It is. And, you know, speaking of messes, there's this, this interesting tidbit that I came across. It seems that President Trump has now achieved a rather, unique distinction.
I'm intrigued.
He is now the only president to oversee three of the five fastest 10% drops in the stock market.
Wow.
Yeah.
So which ones are we talking about?
Well, we've got February 2020, of course.
Right.
And then January, February 2018. And then this latest one, February, March 2025.
Hmm. You know, it's that speed that's really alarming, especially with this most recent one. Like, we're not even a full term in and we're already seeing this kind of volatility.
And remember, 2020? I mean, that drop was incredibly fast.
Right.
Just 8 days to lose 10%.
It's almost like a pattern.
It is. Yeah. And then you start digging into the specifics of these trade policies. And one of the articles you sent, I mean, they just come right out and say it. Dumber than dirt.
Oh, wow. Okay, strong words.
Yeah, they're talking about that whole formula the White House is using to calculate the tariffs. You know, with the elasticity of import demand, which they've decided to call epsilon and set it 4.
Right.
And then the elasticity of import prices, which is phi at 1/4.
Okay, so what's the problem with that?
Well, the White House spokesperson claimed that these two figures, epsilon and phi, would basically cancel each other out.
Uh-huh. Interesting. So they're saying, like, the impact of one will be negated by the impact of the other.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I see where this is going.
But the American Enterprise Institute, which the article refers to as actual professional economists.
Okay. Yeah, they definitely have more credibility.
They strongly disagree.
Of course.
They're saying that that 1/4 value, that's actually the elasticity of retail prices.
Hmm.
But the elasticity of imports is much, much higher. Closer to 0.945, they say.
So it's like comparing apples and oranges.
Exactly. And when you use the correct value for imports, well, the AEI found that the tariffs should actually be between 10% and 14%.
Which is significantly lower than what we're seeing now.
Yeah, it's a huge difference.
And it all comes down to bad data.
Right. Like, how can you make policy decisions when you're working with the wrong numbers?
It's mind-boggling.
It really is. And it's not just the think tanks that are worried.
Mm.
The business community and Wall Street, they're getting pretty vocal about all of this, too.
Hmm. Makes sense. I mean, they're the ones on the front lines.
Yeah. Jamie Dimon, the CEO of JPMorgan Chase.
Okay, yeah. He's a big deal.
He basically said, straight up, in his annual shareholder letter, that these tariffs are going to make inflation worse.
Yeah, it's not surprising.
Right. I mean, it's basic economics.
Tariffs make imports more expensive, and those costs get passed down to the consumer,
Exactly.
like a chain reaction.
And then there's Ken Langone.
Who's that?
He's the founder of Home Depot.
Oh, wow.
And
Okay.
he's actually a Trump supporter.
Interesting.
But even he's calling the tariffs, and I quote, bullshit.
Oh,
He
my.
even said he doesn't understand the formula.
If Ken Langone doesn't get it,
Right.
that says something.
And it's not just him. Stanley Druckenmiller, another billionaire, also a Trump backer, he said he's against any tariffs over 10%. And Bill Ackman, yet another billionaire, and you guess it, another Trump supporter.
Okay, I'm sensing a theme here.
He's calling the tariffs a major policy error.
So even some of his closest allies are starting to have serious doubts.
It seems like it.
That's got a sting.
Yeah. And then there's Elon Musk.
Ah, yes.
The article calls him the donor.
With good reason, I imagine.
Yeah, well, apparently he tried to talk Trump out of the tariffs privately.
Did it work?
Nope. And then he went public with his opposition.
Oh, that's got to go over well.
You know, Trump, he doesn't take criticism well.
Not at all.
And it gets even better. Musk and Peter Navarro, Trump's trade advisor, they've been having this public feud on social media.
Oh, I gotta hear.
Yeah, just trading insults back and forth.
Yikes.
Musk called Navarro a car salesman because he has a Harvard PhD.
Oh, that's a good one.
And Navarro fired back, calling Musk just a car salesman.
Ouch.
It's gotten pretty nasty.
So much for taking the high road.
Right. And all of this has apparently made things even worse between Trump and Musk.
I bet.
And there's even talk that this whole thing could speed up Musk's exit from Doge.
ODE.
I think it's Dogecoin, that
No,
cryptocurrency.
right. Yeah, Musk is really into that.
So yeah, I mean, this trade war drama is even spilling over into the crypto world.
It's like a soap opera at this point.
It really is. And speaking of drama, there's also pushback coming from Capitol Hill.
Oh, really? So Congress is finally stepping up.
It seems like the article points out that if all the Democrats and independents in the Senate vote against the tariffs,
Okay.
they would need 13 Republican votes to overcome a filibuster on any bill that tries to limit Trump's tariff authority.
Right.
And then they'd need another 7 Republican votes to override a veto.
That's a tall order.
Yeah, they're not quite there yet.
So, how many Republicans are actually on board with limiting the tariffs?
Well, there's this bill, the Trade Review Act of 2025.
Okay.
It would basically force Congress to review any new tariffs before they can go into effect.
That makes sense. Checks and balances and all that.
Exactly. And it already has 7 Republican co-sponsors.
Who are they?
Well, you've got Collins, Grassley, McConnell.
Ooh, McConnell, that's significant.
Yeah, and then Moran, Murkowski, Tillis, and Young.
Okay, so a mix of usual suspects and some maybe less predictable ones.
Right, and then you can probably add Rand Paul and Ted Cruz to that list. They're pretty consistently anti-tariff.
Yeah, true.
So the thinking is that if the tariffs start really hurting the economy, we could see even more Republicans joining the rebellion.
That's definitely something to watch.
Oh, and there was this crazy thing that happened yesterday morning.
What happened?
This rumor started spreading on X,
Yeah.
you know, what used to be Twitter.
Oh, right.
Anyway, the rumor was that Trump was going to pause tariffs for 90 days for every country except China.
A temporary truce. Interesting.
Yeah, and it was supposed to like help with negotiations or something.
Okay, that makes sense.
But get this, the Dow Jones jumped 1,000 points in 10 minutes on this news. I
Wow.
know, right?
Yeah.
But then, of course, it turned out to be fake news, and all those gains disappeared just as quickly.
So much for that.
Yeah, but it's really interesting to see how quickly the market reacted.
It shows just how much uncertainty there is around all of this.
And how desperate people are for some good news.
Right.
And actually, there might be some actual news on that front, not just rumors.
Really?
Yeah, Trump announced that he might be willing to lower tariffs on the EU
Okay.
if they agree to buy $350 billion worth of American energy.
That's a lot of energy.
It is.
And how would that even work?
Yeah, that's the thing. No one seems to know, not even people in the administration.
So more of a vague promise than a concrete plan?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
But hey, at least he's talking about lowering tariffs, right?
I guess. Although on the other hand,
Yeah.
he's also threatened to increase tariffs on China by another 50%.
Yeah, so it's a mixed bag for sure.
It's hard to know what to make of it all.
And meanwhile, while all of this is happening, you know, with the markets going up and down and everyone freaking out about the trade war,
Yeah.
Trump is at Mar-a-Lago playing golf.
Of course he is.
But he wasn't just playing, he was competing in a tournament.
Okay.
which he won, by the way.
I'm sure he let everyone know.
Oh, absolutely. He was bragging to reporters about it.
That sounds about right.
And then he went on social media with this, typical Trump rant.
Oh boy, what did he say?
Don't be weak, don't be stupid, don't be a panickin.
A pannikin, is that even a word?
He seems to have invented it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was basically saying, be strong, be courageous, be patient. Greatness is coming.
It's a very different message than we're hearing from the markets.
Yeah, and the article, they couldn't resist comparing it to, like, FDR's fireside chats.
Oh, yeah, the calming reassurance in times of crisis,
Right, very different vibe.
to say the least.
Okay, so let's move on from the trade war for a bit and talk about what's happening with the Supreme Court.
Okay, sounds good.
It's been a pretty busy week for them, with some interesting rulings.
Anything major?
Well, there was a unanimous decision that people facing deportation under the Alien Enemies Act,
Right.
they have to be given a fair warning and a chance to fight their deportation in court.
Okay, that seems fair. Due process and all that. So, good news for those facing deportation, I guess.
Well, not so fast.
Oh.
In another decision, this one 5-4, the court lifted the injunction that was blocking the Alien Enemies Act.
So, back to square one.
Pretty much. And to make matters worse, all those legal battles are now going to happen in federal court in Texas.
That's not ideal.
Yeah, Texas courts tend to be a lot more sympathetic to the Trump administration.
So, not looking good for those challenging the deportations.
It's an uphill battle for sure.
And it really shows how much venue matters in these cases.
Absolutely.
Like, where the case is heard can have a huge impact on the outcome.
Totally. And then there's this case with Kilmer Abrego Garcia.
Who's that?
He's the guy who was deported by
By
mistake.
mistake.
Yeah, even the administration admitted they messed up.
Wow, that's a pretty big mistake.
Yeah, so you'd think getting him back would be a pretty straightforward thing.
Right.
But Chief Justice Roberts, he extended the deadline for Garcia's return.
Why would he do that?
He said he wants more time for the Supreme Court to consider the matter.
That's odd for such a seemingly simple case.
Yeah, it makes you wonder if there's something else going on, maybe some disagreement among the justices.
Could be.
And then there's this whole thing with the shadow docket.
The shadow docket, what's that?
It's basically this emergency docket the court uses to make quick decisions without all the usual briefing and arguments.
Okay, so like a shortcut.
Yeah, and
Yeah.
they used it to grant relief to the Trump administration regarding those teacher training grants.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Those were the grants that Congress authorized and then Trump tried to cancel.
Right, and the lower courts blocked him from doing that.
So Trump went to the Supreme Court.
And they sided with him using this shadow docket.
That's concerning.
Yeah, Justice Jackson, she wrote a pretty scathing dissent.
What does she say?
She basically argued that if this shadow docket has become a way for certain people,
And by certain people, she means the Trump administration.
right, to basically skip the line and get the Supreme Court's opinion without going through the normal process, then they need to be honest about that.
I see her point. It's like they're getting special treatment.
Exactly.
And it undermines the whole idea of a fair and impartial judiciary.
Right. And in this specific case, the government waited weeks before even asking the Supreme Court to intervene.
So it wasn't even that urgent.
Apparently not.
Yeah.
Their main argument was that the grant money might be given out before the TRO expired.
That's a weak argument.
Yeah, and the Supreme Court just went along with it.
So basically, they signal to the lower court that they think they made a mistake without even bothering to hear the full arguments.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's the problem with the shadow docket.
It's like they're making these big decisions behind closed doors,
Right.
and it erodes public trust in the court.
Because it starts to look like they're just doing favors for certain people.
Right. It makes them look biased, even if they're not.
Okay, so let's take a break from all this serious stuff and talk about something a little lighter.
Lighter. After all that, I'm not sure that's possible.
Well, how about a military parade?
Oh, no, not that again. It's back. Apparently, Trump hasn't given up on the idea.
You're kidding.
Nope, he still wants his big military parade.
But didn't they try to do this before?
Yeah, back in his first term.
Right, and it got canceled.
It did. It was going to be way too expensive, like millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah, I remember that.
And people were worried about it damaging the streets.
Plus, everyone thought it was just a ridiculous idea.
Right. And even the Pentagon wasn't that keen on it.
But he's bringing it back.
He is. It seems like some ideas just never die.
I guess not.
Yeah.
So what's changed? Why does he think he can pull it off this time?
Well, for one thing, he's even more authoritarian now.
That's not reassuring.
And he's got all these new appointees who are basically yes men.
Okay, so less pushback from within the administration.
Right, like the current Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth.
Oh, yeah.
He's a very different type than Jim Mattis, who was the Secretary of Defense during Trump's first term.
Yeah, Mattis was a lot more independent.
Right. And he probably would have pushed back against this parade idea. But Hegseth, he's just going to go along with whatever Trump wants.
Pretty much.
And when is this parade supposed to happen?
June 14th
June 14th.
is the Army's 250th anniversary, Trump's 79th birthday.
Oh, of course. How convenient.
Right. So they're trying to sell it as a celebration of the Army, but come on.
It's totally a birthday parade for Trump.
Totally. The plan is to have this 4-mile-long parade route from the Pentagon to the White House.
4 miles. That's insane.
It is.
And how much is this going to cost?
An estimated $125 million.
You've got to be kidding.
Nope, that's the number.
And I'm sure it'll be even more in the end.
Probably. And can you imagine the optics of this?
A huge military parade right down Pennsylvania Avenue.
It's like something out of North Korea.
Or Mussolini's Italy.
The article says that the Democrats and the media are going to have a field day with this.
Oh, for sure.
It's going to be a huge PR disaster.
It's hard to see how it could be anything else.
There are still some hurdles, though. First of all, they only have 10 weeks to pull this off.
10 weeks to organize a massive military parade.
Yeah, good luck with that.
It's a logistical nightmare.
Right. And then there's the fact that they need Congress to approve the funding.
Oh, right, the $125 million.
And that's not going to be easy.
Especially with all the other controversies swirling around.
Yeah, but if Trump really wants this parade, I wouldn't put it past him to find a way.
I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Okay, so let's shift gears again and talk about some actual elections.
Okay, finally.
In Michigan, John James has thrown his hat into the ring for the 2026 gubernatorial race.
John James, the guy who lost those two Senate races.
The one and only.
So why is he running for governor?
Well, it seems his current House seat isn't as safe as he'd like.
What do you mean?
Well, it's in Michigan's 10th congressional district, which is rated R plus 3.
So it leans Republican, but not by much.
Right. And with the possibility of a blue wave in the next election,
I see.
he might be worried about losing.
So governor is a safer bet.
Maybe, but it's still going to be a tough race.
Especially since he's already lost two statewide elections.
Yeah, it's not exactly a strong track record.
And what about the Republican primary? Is he facing any serious challengers?
Well, he's polling at around 40%, which is pretty good.
Okay, so he's the front runner.
Yeah, but the general election is going to be a whole different ballgame.
Right, because now he has a voting record.
Exactly. And the Democrats are going to use that against him for sure.
What kind of stuff has he voted for?
Well, he's been pretty much in line with Trump on everything.
Oh, so that's not going to play well with moderates or independents.
Probably not. And there are even reports that he's been avoiding town halls since Trump's second term started.
That's never a good look.
It makes him seem out of touch.
Yeah, and it plays right into the Democrats' hands.
Right, and his whole campaign message is basically throw the bums out.
But isn't the current governor pretty popular?
Yeah, Gretchen Whitmer has an approval rating of around 60%.
Okay, so that's not going to be an easy message to sell.
Not at all.
And what about Trump? How is that association going to play in 2026?
That's a big question mark.
If Trump's popularity takes a nosedive, it could really hurt James.
Yeah, that's a risk he's taking.
And who are the Democrats running?
Well, it's a crowded field, but they're all pretty strong candidates.
Any names we would recognize?
Jocelyn Benson is the likely frontrunner.
Okay, I've heard of her.
She's the Secretary of State.
Right.
And the article makes this interesting point.
What's that?
You know how people always assume that a black Republican candidate is a guaranteed win?
Yeah, like there's some kind of magical unicorn.
Right. Well, the article says that's not always true.
Yeah, for every Tim Scott, there's a Herschel Walker.
Exactly. And early polling shows James trailing Benson by a few points.
So it's going to be a close race.
It could be. But there's another wrinkle. Mike Duggan.
Who's he?
He's the former mayor of Detroit, and he's running as an independent.
Oh, wow, that could shake things up.
He's currently polling at around 18%.
That's significant.
It is. But historically, support for independent candidates tends to fade as the election gets closer.
So those votes could end up going to Benson.
It's possible.
So this race is going to be one to watch.
Definitely.
It's going to be a real nail biter.
Okay, so let's head down to Texas now.
Okay, what's happening there?
Well, there's a vacant House seat in the 18th congressional district.
Why is it vacant?
The representative, Sylvester Turner, passed away.
Oh, that's sad.
It is. So they need to hold a special election to fill the seat.
Right. That makes sense.
But the timing of this election is a little, suspicious.
What do you mean?
Governor Abbott, he usually moves pretty quickly to schedule special elections.
Okay.
even when the district is likely to be won by a Democrat.
So he's not playing partisan games?
Not usually. But this time, he's set the election for November 4th.
November 4th? That's ages away.
I know, right? It means the seat will be empty for 8 months.
So what's the deal? Why the delay?
Well, the article strongly implies that it's all about helping the Republicans keep their slim majority in the House.
I see. They need every vote they can get.
Exactly. And if Abbott had scheduled the election sooner, it could have been held on May 5th, which is the Texas primary day.
So he's intentionally dragging his feet.
It seems like it. And the Democrats are not happy about it.
I bet not.
They're even talking about suing, but, you know, it's Texas.
Yeah, not exactly a friendly environment for Democrats.
The article says their chances of winning in court are pretty much zero.
So the Republicans get to keep their extra seat for a while longer.
Looks like it.
Okay, so let's wrap up with those hands-off protests.
Yeah, these are interesting.
A lot of your listeners send in reports about these protests, right?
Tons. It seems like they're happening all over the place, especially in swing states.
And what's the main message? What are they protesting?
It's kind of a bad message, but it's basically about pushing back against the Trump administration and its policies.
So a general sense of dissatisfaction with the direction things are going.
Yeah, and they're trying to get the attention of elected officials, even Republicans, and maybe even the Supreme Court.
So a call for action.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And what's really striking is the turnout.
Oh, yeah.
They're getting huge crowds, even in places that are usually deep red.
Wow. So it's not just the usual suspects.
Nope. It seems like a lot of people are fed up.
That's significant.
Yeah. There was this one report from Watertown, Wisconsin.
Okay.
It's a small town, population 25,000, very Republican.
Yeah.
175 people showed up for the protest.
That's a pretty good turnout for a small town.
Right. And then in Milwaukee, there was a massive rally.
Milwaukee, that's a Democratic stronghold.
It is. But even so, the turnout was impressive.
So people are fired up, even in places where you'd expect them to be more supportive of Trump.
Exactly. And then there's Minnesota.
What happened there?
Well, Senator Klobuchar, she flew back from D.C. to speak at a rally in St. Paul.
So she's taking this seriously.
Yeah. And the crowd was estimated at 25,000 people.
That's huge.
It is. And we even got a report from someone who took their elderly parents to their first ever political rally.
Wow, that's amazing.
Right. And in North Carolina, there was a smaller protest in a very red county.
Okay.
But even there, people were honking their horns in support.
So even in Trump country, there's some sympathy for the protests.
It seems like it. We also got a picture from a rally in Las Vegas.
Las Vegas, that's a key swing state.
It is.
And what about Pennsylvania?
Oh, they're having some big protests there, too.
Where specifically?
Well, there was one in this small borough with a population of 20,000, and they had several thousand protesters.
That's more than 10% of the population.
I know, right? And then in Lancaster, which is this really conservative city.
Lancaster. Yeah, I've heard of it.
They had over 1,000 people at their protest, and it spilled out into the streets.
So even in deep red areas, people are turning out in large numbers.
It's pretty amazing.
And what about the people at these protests? Are they all the usual, you know, liberal activists?
That's the thing. It seems like it's a really diverse crowd.
Interesting.
There's this one quote from a listener in Lancaster who said, "Even the introverts are out right now."
Wow, that's powerful.
Right. It shows just how strongly people feel about this.
So what's the end game here? What are these protesters hoping to achieve?
Well, they're trying to change public opinion.
Okay.
And put pressure on politicians, including Republicans, and even on the Supreme Court.
So they're trying to create a movement.
Yeah, a movement that's big enough and loud enough that it can't be ignored.
That's ambitious.
It is. But if they can keep up this momentum,
they might actually have a chance.
You never know.
It's definitely something to keep an eye on.
So that's it for our deep dive into April 8th, 2025.
We covered a lot of ground today.
We did. We talked about trade wars, the Supreme Court, military parades, elections, and protests.
It's a whirlwind tour of American politics.
It is. And really shows how interconnected everything is.
Yeah. One thing affects another, and it all just keeps spinning faster and faster.
Ah, exactly. So, with all of that in mind, with all the uncertainty and the chaos and the division that we've talked about today, What do you think is the biggest challenge facing the country right now?
That's a really tough question. But I think more than anything else, we need to find a way to talk to each other again.
What do you mean?
I mean, really talk, not just shout at each other from across the political divide.
I see.
We need to find common ground. We need to listen to each other. We need to understand where the other side is coming from.
That's a tall order in this current climate.
It is, but it's absolutely essential.
If we want to solve any of the problems we're facing.
Exactly.
So that's a great place to end.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. And to all our listeners out there, keep those sources coming, and we'll see you next time for another deep dive.
Until then,
stay informed, stay engaged, and stay curious.